You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we will, of course, recap some of the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, talk about the latest news around baseball, including a lengthy list of injuries, and lastly, give all of you some streamer recommendations at the end of the show for you to utilize next week. But before we get into all of the good stuff, John, how's your week been going?
Well, we were just talking before we started recording the pod. My opponent has 5 homers and 10 RBIs today. So it more or less sunk my matchup this week, which sucks because it was the first place team versus the third place team. And our playoffs start in, we have one more matchup before the playoffs start. So this was really kind of a big seeding game. And yeah, it's not going well for me, which is unfortunate. I was really hoping to vie for first place this time around. And it does not look like that will be in the cards for me this season.
Yeah, I forgot that your league is super early for the playoffs, which is crazy to think about. Like, I'm not even halfway through my fantasy season in my home league, and you're about to be in the playoffs.
Right. I mean, I will say, like, it is a very weird league, and we do 2-week playoff rounds as well. And then because of the way our league is structured, like, the first 6 or 7 teams in the standings all get a bye. So it's going to be really weird because I have this matchup and then I've got next week's matchup. And then I'm basically off for 2 weeks because I'm going to you know, earn a bye in the first round of the playoffs. So, yeah, it feels weird that, like, right during the All-Star break is, like, when our playoffs start. But it's an interesting league, and I, you know, I've done well in it in the past couple of years. So it is fun. But yeah, home leagues are weird. They always do not follow the exact quirkiness that, like, other standard fantasy baseball leagues usually go with.
Right, but that's always the fun part about it. And you're with your friends, and it's a long-standing league. Like, I love my home league. It's my favorite thing to do. I do weekly write-ups. I do so many different things for our league to have fun with baseball and fantasy baseball that it just makes it so enjoyable for me and my friends. So I always enjoy that the most. And like you said, your matchup is for first and third. Mine is also first and third. I'm in first so far, and my opponent this week in my home league is in third. And we are actually the 2 most winning managers in our league, where he has won 4 times, I believe, and I have won twice. So we are pretty stacked on that trophy of ours. So hopefully I can come out on top, but he just has such a better matchup than me this week. Like, he has 15 starters. I have 8. He's got a full lineup on Monday and Thursday. I didn't. I had like 4 at-bats both times. Just not a good matchup. So sometimes you just have to take the L, but hopefully we can grind this out and I can stay in first place for this fantasy week. But yeah, home leagues are great. Fantasy is in the full swing of things. And speaking about fantasy being in the full swing of things, we have such a lengthy and huge name injury list this week. It is just appalling. So let's get into it. But before we announce the news from this past week, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We are on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. So wherever you listen to your podcasts on, make sure that you follow us. And please, if you have the time, leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It helps us out a lot, so please make sure to do that. Now, let's get into the news from this past week. As I stated before, it is pretty long, and there are some big names, so hopefully I'm not disappointing a lot of you, and I hope that you guys can get through this hard period of the season, because there's always this period of the season where all your big guys go down, and we're not happy about it. So, we will start with Kyle Bradish of the Orioles, who was placed on the 15-day IL on Saturday with a right UCL sprain. On Wednesday, Bradish underwent Tommy John surgery and will miss the remainder of the 2024 season, as well as the first half of the 2025 season. Just a brutal blow. I mean, we already knew that Bradish had a UCL problem coming into the season, and he opted to not do surgery. And now, obviously, inevitably, he is undergoing Tommy John. So we kind of saw this one coming, but it's unfortunate nonetheless. So hopefully Kyle Bradish can return sometime in the 2025 season. Jordan Westberg of the Orioles wasn't in the lineup on Wednesday after suffering a bruised left hip during Tuesday's game when colliding in the infield with Juan Soto. However, he was back in the lineup on Thursday, so he's day-to-day, but he should be good to go. Mookie Betts of the Dodgers was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday with a fractured left hand. He will miss 6 to 8 weeks. The only good news about Mookie Betts and that injury is that it's not his right hand, so it shouldn't affect his bowling. So he should be able to bowl while he recovers. So Mookie Betts, get well soon. Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday after being diagnosed with a right rotator cuff strain. Manager Dave Roberts said that while the injury is not season-ending, Yamamoto is not going to throw for a couple of weeks, and then we will see where we go from there. So we don't really know what the time frame is for Yamamoto, but hopefully it's not too long, and like Dave Roberts said, it shouldn't be season-ending, so at least that's some good news. Walker Buehler of the Dodgers was placed on the 15-day IL on Wednesday with right hip inflammation. He was hit by a comebacker and unfortunately sustained this injury. In a corresponding move, Bobby Miller was activated from the 15-day IL, so one comes and one goes. You hate to see it, but man, the Dodgers going through it. Betts, Yamamoto, and Buehler. Just unfortunate. Michael Harris II of the Braves was placed on the 10-day IL on Saturday with a grade 2 left hamstring strain. He's currently without a timetable for return. Max Scherzer of the Rangers will return from the 60-day IL and start against the Royals on Saturday. He's been recovering from off-season back surgery and battling thumb and forearm injuries throughout his rehab process. Aaron Judge of the Yankees wasn't in the Yankees lineup on Wednesday after being hit by a pitch in the hand on Tuesday. X-rays and a CT scan came back negative for any structural damage, meaning that Judge is okay. He was even in the lineup on Thursday and hit a home run, so every fantasy manager can take a big sigh of relief. Yordan Alvarez of the Astros wasn't in the Astros lineup on Wednesday due to a family matter. However, he was back in the lineup on Thursday and also hit a home run. Justin Verlander of the Astros was placed on the 15-day IL on Tuesday, retroactive to June 16th, with neck discomfort. CJ Abrams of the Nationals was scratched from Wednesday's lineup due to a wrist issue. He'll undergo an MRI, and more information should be known about his status soon. Bo Bichette of the Blue Jays was placed on the 10-day IL on Tuesday, retroactive to June 15th, with a right calf strain. In a corresponding move, top prospect Aurelvis Martinez was called up. Jesus Luzardo of the Marlins is battling a stiff back. There's no further news on Luzardo yet, so consider him day-to-day for now, but it's been kind of a disappointing season for Luzardo, so hopefully this time away, we'll be able to get him back on track. Jazz Chisholm Jr. of the Marlins was scratched from Wednesday's lineup due to right hamstring tightness. Nolan Arenado of the Cardinals expects to return to the lineup on Saturday. He's been out due to a bruised right elbow that he suffered after being hit by a pitch in that area. Kyle Gibson of the Cardinals was scratched from his start on Wednesday due to back tightness. Pete Fairbanks of the Rays has a bruised right thumb, but will apparently be available when needed out of the pen. Consider him day-to-day for now. JT Realmuto of the Phillies told reporters on Tuesday that he's planning to return by next month's All-Star break. Realmuto is coming back from right knee surgery to repair a tear in his meniscus. TJ Friedl of the Reds is currently day-to-day with a tight hamstring. And last but not least, Jamer Candelario of the Reds is battling tendonitis and is considered to be day-to-day for the time being. So that wraps up the big list of some pretty big stars around baseball being hurt. John, any comments on this list?
Only that my TGFBI team is just hurting real bad right now. But yeah, Mookie going down, that's obviously huge. And, you know, obviously for the Dodgers, you know, it actually doesn't matter too much for them because they're still going to be very much in contention when Mookie gets back. But being out for essentially up to potentially 8 matchups in fantasy baseball, that's huge. It's going to be near impossible to replace Mookie on your fantasy teams. You can certainly try and see what you could do there. I mean, Miguel Vargas is obviously a very interesting name, and his roster chip probably has shot up quite a bit since this news. And yeah, it's tough because he had eligibility at second base, shortstop, and outfield, and could basically just play, you know, anywhere on your roster. And so having that flexibility kind of allows you to build your team around that flexibility, and not now you don't have that, it's going to be a little tougher to replace him.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm in the same pain with TGFBI. Like I said, I lost Acuna right away, so like I'm dead in the water. Like I'm not expecting anything to happen. There's no one out there that can replace that kind of production. And kind of similarly, Mookie Betts is the same way, just because you probably drafted him as your starting second baseman or your starting shortstop or your starting outfielder, and all those positions are kind of hard to fill, especially in this point in the season. And Mookie is in one of the best lineups in baseball, so just very hard to replace that kind of guy. Thankfully, Judge and Alvarez are okay. Obviously, CJ Abrams could be hurt. And then you have Bueller going down, Yamamoto going down, Bradish going down. A lot of scary things. But hopefully, we can stay healthy for the majority of the season. I mean, we've lost a lot of people already, and some people have lingering issues at the moment. But just fingers crossed that we can get through the season with not many more big-name injuries, because I know I can't take it in most leagues, so I know most of you can't as well. So I'm just hoping for the best for all of us. But let's move on to the player performances from this past week. Let's start with the weekend, which was Friday to Sunday, June 14th, June 16th. John, who performed well over the weekend?
Yeah, we're going to start with Jackson Merrill of the Padres. 1-for-3 with a run, a homer, and an RBI. Not like an amazing line, but he is actually in the middle of a fairly strong rookie season. I was kind of looking at rookie ladders, and he's been pretty solid this year. I think he's like 10th among all rookies in WRC Plus, and there's some very interesting names in front of him, like Andy Podges or Michael Bush, to put up a few names. So Jackson Merrill for sure just in the hunt for rookie of the year sort of accolades. But he currently on the season is slashing .279, .317, .417, which is a pretty good line for a rookie. And on Friday, he provided San Diego's only run with a solo shot that traveled almost 400 feet. He's actually was in the middle of a short power streak, as he hit two homers on the Wednesday previous and then followed up this effort with another homer on Saturday. He's showing very good plate discipline, only has a 16% strikeout rate and a 34.5% hard contact rate. So when he is turning on the ball and putting into play, it's coming off the bat pretty hard. The counting stats have been pretty decent. 8 homers, 9 stolen bases, with 200-plus-ish at-bats. That's a really good start for Merrill. And, yeah, I think it's been weird because this season has been a lot of conversation on the hot rookie pitchers. And not a lot about the hot rookie hitters. But Merrill, for sure, is kind of leading the charge there. And he's looking like a guy who could easily average, a 2020 season for the next few years. And being able to do that for San Diego in the outfield position is going to be really solid. Next, on Saturday, we move on to Anthony Santander of the Baltimore Orioles. 2-for-2 with 2 homers, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. On a night where Riley Green and JD Martinez both also had 2 homer days, we're going to talk about Santander, who was heating up in June after a lackluster performance in both April and May. It probably doesn't do him any favors that he's overshadowed by the hype of the young stars on his team. And also over the last 2 months, it just hasn't been very good. 208 and 207 average respectively in both those months, with only 7 home runs total in April and May. So certainly nothing amazing, nothing like what we've expected from Santander. However, this month he is hitting .298, including 8 home runs and only 64 plate appearances. So clearly he is getting good at just the right time. And then finally wrapping up the weekend with Austin Riley of the Atlanta Braves. 2-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Riley's home run this game was just his 6th home run of the season. That should probably tell you how this season has been going for Riley. He has a .246, .315, .404 slash line. This is just not what you expect from a guy who pretty consistently was rated at least a top 5 third baseman, if not like a top 3 third baseman, kind of pushing into that conversation. Predictably, of course, the 1 year that I'm in on him pre-draft is the season where he starts struggling, so just a classic fantasy Murphy's Law right there. The good news is Riley historically turns it up in July and August during the summer. He has a career 157 and 133 WRC Plus respectively in those 2 months. He's still making a lot of hard contact with a 33% hard contact rate, and he's maintaining his strikeout and walk rates from the last few seasons as well. He is, however, dealing with the lowest BABIP of his last 4 seasons, and his home run to fly ball rate has dropped by over half of what it's normally been for the last 4 seasons. Weirdly enough, his ground ball and fly ball rates have been about the same, so maybe it's, the whole ball being dead sort of thing that we've talked about, and maybe it's just Riley not making hard contact at the right time. But it has been a weird season for him, and hopefully he can heat up as the summer continues.
Yeah, so Jackson Merrill has been pretty much on fire for the last like month or so, because you mentioned that he had a homer on Friday and then also on Saturday. Then he followed it up on Wednesday and Thursday going homer. So he's been having a great week or 2 weeks, and he is definitely firmly in the NL Rookie of the Year discussion. I mean, he's been phenomenal. I mean, 32 runs, 8 homers, 30 RBI, 9 stolen bases, just what you love to see from a rookie. So Jackson Merrill has been crushing it. Anthony Santander is up to 19 home runs now, so that's impressive in itself. I mean, we kind of expect big power from him. He had 28 home runs last season with 95 RBI, so kind of on pace to beat that and have more RBI as well, because the Orioles are a great team, so it's great to see that. And you also mentioned Riley Green, who had an amazing game on Saturday, 4-for-5, 2 home runs, 6 RBI, just incredible there. So shout out to Riley Green. You mentioned him before. And then Austin Riley, like you said, he's been hitting the ball pretty well and making good contact. It has the lowest BABIP. I feel like him and Matt Olson both are kind of struggling in that regard, where they're hitting the ball hard, they're doing everything right, and it's just not yielding results. So I guess we'll see. I mean, right now it looks like the ball is changing. I'm not sure about the exact statistics to back it up, but I'm seeing a lot more offensive production as of late. And I don't know whether that's the heat, and obviously with it getting into summer, that everyone is heating up a little bit more with the weather and the ball is traveling a little further, or they change the ball a little bit, because pitchers were dominating for quite some time, and now batters are starting to creep up and start performing well. So maybe we'll see Riley and Olson and other Braves players, to say the least, turn it around, because they've been playing really well, just not giving you any numbers that you want to see.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, we've talked so much about this over the past couple podcasts, so we'll try not to beat that dead horse too much. Moving on to pitchers, we're going to start with Mackenzie Gore of the Washington Nationals going up against the Marlins. Got a win in this one on Friday, 7 innings with 1 run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. Gore's fastball was perfect on Friday. It was perfectly spotted upstairs and set up a 40% CSW rate for all his pitches. His curve, his change, and his slider all earned over 40% CSW on that day. This is peak Gore and what everyone had been hoping for since he started in the majors in San Diego. He's currently 18th in strikeout rate with a respectable 3.24 ERA and a 1.32 whip. Yep, it's not elite ace numbers, right? You'd love to see those, you know, a little bit lower. But for a guy who was very available at the end of drafts, he's been playing off great dividends for your fantasy team. Moving on to Saturday, his teammate DJ Hers, also facing Miami, got a win in this one with 6 innings with no earned runs, 1 hit, no walks, and 13 strikeouts. I guess he had to outdo Gore just a little bit. Yeah, clearly when the Nationals play the Marlins, their pitchers just turn on the jets, because DJ Hers absolutely cooked with his fastball as well, earned 13 whips by itself, and his changeup returned to 45% CSW. Now, of course, the question everyone's asking is, how legit is this start, considering that it came against the Marlins? Well, he didn't look awful in his previous two starts against Atlanta and the Mets, but we're also not expecting 13 strikeouts every game from Hers. At the end of the day, he's somewhat in the middle, but he does have some struggles with his command. He might be more like the meh pitcher rather than a guy who can get us a gem like this 13 strikeout game on a more consistent basis. And then wrapping up the weekend with Carter Crawford, 6 innings with 3 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. Look, when you face the Yankees at Fenway, there are going to be some runs that you give up, especially when you throw a pitch middle-middle to a guy called Aaron Judge. However, ignoring the two homers that Cutter gave up, he was at his peak. His sweeper, four-seamer, Cutter were all playing off each other very well. And when two of those pitches perform with a CSW over 40%, and then the other one is near 40%, that's got to be a good thing, even when you give up two homers. By limiting the damage, not letting men on base, he still ended up getting the win and a quality start in this game.
Yeah, these three pitchers, all kind of polarizing. Gore has been fantastic this season. I believe we talked about him last week. I told everyone that I'm all in on him. I know Nick has him just propelling up the rankings. Like, he is going crazy on Gore. And rightfully so. I mean, Gore was a top pitching prospect, and he's starting to really deliver on that. And he's putting together some amazing performances. He's striking out a lot of people. He's got a 96 plus mile per hour fastball that he locates at the top of the zone and pretty good secondary. So if he pieces it all together, he could be a true ace. Unfortunately, he didn't have a great start on Thursday, but obviously you're not going to be great every time out. He still struck out 7 in 5 innings, so it's pretty good from Gore. But Mackenzie Gore is very good, so I'm excited to see what he does for the rest of the season. DJ Hers, however, I'm not too familiar with. I know him from the prospect side of things, but I haven't really followed his starts. He had a great performance here. I mean, obviously, it's the Marlins. 13 strikeouts against the Marlins. It's doable. When you say that, I'm not really as impressed as if you were to say 13 Ks against the Yankees. So, yeah, it's a little bit different when it comes against the Marlins, but still, you can't take anything away from this. So, if he's able to get his command on track, he might be someone that creeps from occasional streamer to maybe you take a flyer on as like an SP7. I don't know. DJ Hers could be a name that you want to remember. And then Cutter Crawford, not much to say. He's been great all season, but my favorite Easter egg on the pitcher list website is that if you go to his player page and you look at his pitches, his cutter is spelled K-U-T-T-E-R like his name. And that is one of my favorite Easter eggs on the pitcher list website. So if you didn't know that, go and check it out and you'll get a little chuckle out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I've been trying to think about whether I want to take Cutter Crawford onto my home league team, but I already have two Boston pitchers, and I did have Brayden Bayo on this team before. So it feels kind of weird to get a third Red Sox pitcher on this team. But despite the fact that their record hasn't been like amazing, I think they're like a little bit, they're a few games under 500. All their pitchers, their starting pitchers have been great this year.
Yeah, the Red Sox staff has been phenomenal. I mean, literally everyone's been great except for Brian Bayo. Launch that guy into the moon. I am so far done with Brian Bayo. I just cannot stand him. So, yeah, launch him into the sun. Nick Pivetta, you can stay. Garrett Whitlock, I know you're hurt. Cutter Crawford's been awesome. Tanner Houck's been great. So we've seen some great pitching performances from the Red Sox, and hopefully we can see that continue, and hopefully Nick Pivetta can continue to get better and better because I have a lot of stock in him. But now we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about the rest of the performances from this past week, so stay tuned. All right, we are back, and it's time to talk about Monday, June 17th. Thanks to Christian Ottoman for the O'Neill's Armstrong hitter recap article. We will start with the title boy himself, Tyler O'Neill of the Red Sox, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 2 RBI, and a walk. O'Neill started off the season blistering hot and was looking like a prime rejuvenation candidate after moving from the Cardinals to the Red Sox. In April, he had a 1,062 OPS, but in May, he only put up a 545 OPS with 2 home runs. He was placed on the IL shortly after with right knee inflammation and just recently returned from that. Well, the time off might have done him some good because he appears to be back on track. In just a few games this month, O'Neill has a 1,112 OPS and hit 2 homers on Monday, as well as another one on Tuesday. He also ranks in the 90th percentile or better in expected slugging percentage, bat speed, barrel percentage, and hard hit percentage, so this is clearly not a fluke. We always knew that Tyler O'Neill can hit the ball hard. I mean, look at his biceps. But hopefully O'Neill can stay hot and carry our fantasy teams to a championship, mine included. Next, we have Kyle Schwarber of the Phillies, who went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and 2 walks. June Schwarber is here and thriving. If you all didn't know, Kyle Schwarber absolutely destroys in the month of June, which is unfortunate for managers like me that are currently going up against him in several head-to-head leagues. It is not fun. Schwarber now has 17 homers on the year after hitting one on Tuesday as well, and has hit 6 home runs in his last 8 games. For the season, Schwarber is 97th percentile or better in average exit velocity, bat speed, and hard hit percentage. Right now, Schwarber is absolutely locked in as we expect in June, so buckle up and enjoy the ride. And then lastly, I had to give a shout out to Freddie Freeman of the Dodgers, who went 1-for-1. Why did Lee mention that? Well, he scored 2 runs and had 5 walks. You just have to shout someone out for getting 5 walks in one game. That's absurd.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. Like, the guy had 6 at-bats, and he got on base every single time, which
yeah, it's just insane.
Incredible. Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I'm facing Kyle Schwarber in my home league this week, and it hurts so bad. And I love Kyle Schwarber. I've tried to get him on my team most years, but this year I wasn't feeling it. I instead got Tyler O'Neill, which I think is a pretty solid trade-off. Except for the fact that O'Neill's been, you know, hurt from time to time. But yeah, when he's on, he's so good. And I'm so glad that I get to kind of root for him, for having him on my fantasy team. It's been a really fun ride.
That's so funny that you mentioned that you didn't get Kyle Schwarber in your home league, because I also wanted him in my draft. I didn't get him, unfortunately. And then the first week of the season, I picked up Tyler O'Neill as well. So yeah, we kind of had the same move progression there. So we got a little consolation prize for not getting Schwarber. And for those who don't know, Schwarber is so much better in points leagues and OBP leagues, because he may have a .254 batting average this season, which honestly is his second best of his career.
That's really good for Schwarber.
Yeah. He had a .266 batting average in 2021, and that was his best, .266. So .254 is his second best, but the OBP is .375, and that's elite, as well as a .463 slugging percentage and .839 OPS. So Kyle Schwarber just dominates, and he's heating up. It's June. It's wonderful, unless you're versing him like John and I are. So unfortunately for us, we are not having a good time, but I'm sure if you roster Kyle Schwarber, you are super happy about it. Moving on to pitchers from Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Here Comes the Peterson SP Roundup article. I think it's the Here Comes the Peterson, but I didn't really know if that was the one, so I didn't want to go with it, but I thought I'd say it anyways. We start with Reese Olson of the Tigers, who went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Braves. Let's give a little pat on the back to John for suggesting Olson as a streamer last week. Now, of course, it's easy to recommend a guy that has been generally good this season, but as of recent, Olson's results have kind of fallen off. Well, not in this start on Monday. Olson's changeup and slider were fantastic against a middling Braves lineup, and he managed to avoid the middle of the plate with his sinker and four-seamer. He gets the White Sox next, and I'd be brave enough to say, hold on to him and stream him for that matchup as well, because that seems pretty good. Next, we have James Paxton of the Dodgers, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts against the Rockies at Coors Field. So this highlight isn't to tell all of you to pick up Paxton and utilize him in any way, shape, or form. This is more of a, what in the world, how did you do that type of coverage. So Paxton's been pretty up and down all season. Early on, he was streamable and pitching great. And as of recent, he's been quite terrible. Well, in Coors Field, Paxton turned back the clock and racked up 8 strikeouts. The four-seamer was up and the curveball was down, leading to his success. If you're desperate, he gets the Angels next time out. And I personally wouldn't do it, but you might be able to stream him there too. So we'll see if John recommends him later on, but I don't think he will. We'll see.
Yeah, so actually, one thing about Paxton, I think his schedule's been updated now, and he's lined up to face the White Sox, which is interesting. This is supposedly assuming that Landon Knack is called up and plays in. We're recording this on Thursday on Friday's game, so I don't know if that's official news yet that Landon Knack is getting called up to the majors for a spot start, but. Yeah, Paxton against the White Sox, I like a little bit better against the Angels. But it's still kind of a coin for me, because I thought about recommending Paxton. But he's actually in that same range that we of all the guys that we recommended last week, of like kind of the 30% roster on Yahoo. So it's like not exactly a streamer quality. But he's probably available if you like a Monday stream, right, to get the juices flowing in your fantasy matchup. Maybe go Paxton. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't see that update where he got pushed to the White Sox, because that changes things. I kind of don't mind him against the White Sox, but also, like, what really is the difference between the White Sox and the Angels? I would argue that the White Sox kind of have a better lineup, especially against a lefty with Luis Robert, Andrew Vaughn, Tommy Pham. So,
yep.
I kind of don't feel great about the White Sox with Paxton, but I mean, after a performance like this, I don't blame you if you chase it, but I just personally wouldn't, especially because, like you said, it's on a Monday and streaming on a Monday, unless you are like way behind in starts against your opponent in a head-to-head league, then maybe it makes sense to grab him and hope for the softball matchup, but it's still risky for me.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to Tuesdays, games. We're going to start with hitters. Thanks to Mark Stubinger for the Craw and Forder hitter recap article. We are going to start with Jesus Sanchez of the Miami Marlins with a 3-for-5 day. Had a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. He finished a triple shy of the cycle, which arguably is the hardest thing to happen. So I usually don't love saying that you finish a triple shy. But he did get all his hits against our friend and yours, Cardinals veteran Lance Lynn, who, you know, even when he has the soft matchups, man, it just does not look good. I'm not trying to pile on Lance Lynn, but ugh, this season, not pretty. Back to Sanchez. I'm actually shocked that he's only 26 years old. Like, it feels like he's been around for a while. But every season, it's like you're waiting for the breakout. It doesn't happen. You wait for the breakout. It doesn't happen. It felt like maybe this year, you know, with some of the good vibes from the Marlins getting into the playoffs, maybe Sanchez can finally break out. But again, it's been pretty disappointing. But, you know, the same as the rest of the Marlins team, they've been pretty disappointing in general. He's only hit 6 homers through 66 games. He's slashing a very pedestrian 243, 290, 379. A slugging under 400 for a guy who should be your slugger is just not a great number. His hard hit and barrel rates are both 80th percentile, though, among big leaguers. And his 349 xWOBA far outpaces his actual 287 WOBA. But unfortunately, we're just not seeing the real results, so it doesn't matter how good his expected numbers are. He is just not returning any sort of dividends. Moving on to our second player, Dylan Moore of the Mariners. 2-for-4 with a double, a homer, 3 runs, an RBI, a walk, and a stolen base. Moore brought a combo meal to Seattle's 8-5 victory over the Guardians. He stole second base against Tristan McKenzie in the third inning before homering against Cade Smith in the sixth. Moore has bounced around all around the Mariners lineup this season. He's batted in the ninth spot for the last 4 games, but he's also batted second. He's batted seventh. He's batted first. He's been all over the place. But he's been consistent in terms of being able to, you know, provide some offense regardless of wherever he is. Moore has posted a WRC plus of 105 or better in 4 of the last 5 seasons while playing all over the diamond as a utility man. He's not a household name, but he certainly could be on pace for a 1530 season this year, and that's not a fantasy stat to take lightly. Even though his average this season is hovering around the Mendoza line, he's got a reasonable 319 OBP that will still give him chances to get on base, to steal bases, and score runs.
So both of these guys are pretty underwhelming, right? Like, you've chased these ceilings before. We've been disappointed by these guys before. They're kind of fill-in role players. Like, if a guy gets injured, you need a backup outfielder. You need a backup middle infielder. Dylan Moore's there. Jesus Sanchez is there. Jesus Sanchez, I don't know. I always feel like he should be better than he is. And I just think that he could do better. Like you said, I'm surprised he's 26 years old as well, because like you said, I feel like he's been in the league forever. I feel like I've been fading him in drafts and picking him up off the wire and doing that for like 10 years now. So pretty impressive that he's only 26 years old, because I did not expect that. I'm not too into Jesus Sanchez in the deepest of leagues, 5 outfielder leagues. If you need someone, if you need some sort of power production, I don't know, only 6 homers through 66 games, like you mentioned. It's just not that impressive. So Jesus Sanchez, great game, but I'm not too interested in fantasy. For Dylan Moore, I'm a little bit more interested because he has been batting second as of late, like you mentioned, and he can provide speed. So he does have a lot of different eligibilities for positions. And if you need one of the positions that he's eligible at, he can give you a sort of, like you mentioned, 15-30 season. You know, 15 homer, 30 stolen base season, and that can be very helpful. So I'm not going to count Moore out, and if you need a utility player, he's a pretty good get. But overall, I'm not too impressed with either of these guys.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're kind of like those guys that you mentioned, right, are always on your waiver wire, right? You can always, you always have an opportunity to pick one of these guys up.
Yep.
And you know, I think we said this last week in fantasy baseball, like, baseball is a super streaky game, right? So if Dylan Moore is suddenly getting combo meals, like, hey, maybe look him up, see, maybe pick him up and see if he can kind of continue that streak for the next 2-3 weeks. And then, you know, when he drops off and, you know, the Mariners start batting him a little bit further down in the order, maybe that's when you jump ship and look for the next guy who's, you know, available on the wire, who's on a hot streak.
Yeah, you have to ride out the hot streaks whenever they're available. And if he's on one, he can carry you through weeks in head-to-head leagues and definitely pick up the slack for you in those roto leagues. So don't underestimate the hot streak.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick again for the Cannon Indeed SP Roundup article. We're going to start with Nick Lodolo of the Reds going up against Pittsburgh, getting a win this one. 7 innings with 1 earned run, 4 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts. Since coming off the IL in late May, Lodolo has been very solid. 4 out of 5 starts, finishing with a quality start, and 5 straight wins in those 5 starts. He has a 2.08 ERA with a 1.09 whip in those 5 starts and a minuscule 4.7% walk rate. Really good numbers. The challenge, of course, is the lack of strikeouts, but that's kind of more due to some low strikeout numbers coming right off IL. He's been looking good the last 3 starts. He's provided plenty of that in this start with the curveball returning a 50% CSW, got 8 whips and 5 called strikes alone, while his changeup got 6 outs on 7 balls in play. He gets the Pirates again, and then the Cardinals next, and it looks like Lodolo is poised to start making his way up the pitcher rankings again. Moving on to Spencer Schwellenbach, great name there, of the Atlanta Braves, going up against Detroit, got a win in this one, 6 innings with 1 run, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Let me just list off some numbers from Schwellenbach's start on Tuesday. 35% CSW with 7 whiffs on the cutter, 35% CSW on his four-seamer, 36% CSW on his curveball, and then he got 6 out of 7 strikes on the splitter. All this, and he had a 76% strike rate on his slider and 14 whips across all his breakers. That's what it looks like when you face the Tigers. All your pitchers look great. Good job for Spencer. I really thought about streaming this, but I was a little too scared because I didn't have enough information on Schwellenbach and wasn't convinced that this guy was going to be like a solid pitcher, but turns out I was wrong about that. He now gets the reversal of Lodolo in his next 2 starts. He gets the Cardinals first and then the Pirates, so I would say find a way to get this man on your fantasy team.
So for Nick Lodolo, he's been very good, especially in his last 4 starts. He's got 4 straight quality starts. He's got a strikeout per inning pretty much. Just doing a very good job managing some pretty tough lineups like the Cubs and the Guardians. So it's good to see that he's flourishing and he's kind of back. I mean, a 2.76 ERA for the year and a 1.01 whip. Very, very, very good. So I think that Lodolo is primed to shoot up the list from Nick, and I think that he's going to be very helpful as long as he remains healthy for your fantasy teams. And then Schwellenbach, I wasn't too familiar with his game, insert the famous meme there, but I didn't really pick him up anywhere. I should have known just because it's the Braves and they always have these guys come up and they're good, but I have to look more into Schwellenbach and really deep dive into, hey, is he worth rostering in, say, a 10-team league and a 12-team league? Because a start like this is very, very impressive, right? Like 89 pitches, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts. Tigers aren't the strongest offense, but they're pretty good. They're passable.
Yeah.
So the fact that he did this well and everything looked really, really good, it makes me want to roster him. But I kind of have to do a little bit of more research on him to see if he's worth it. It might be too late by then. Someone might already roster him by then. So if you have a open spot on your team, then go ahead and take the gamble because he can be very good. And the Braves need pitching, so he might have a safe spot in the rotation. You never know. But yeah, look into Schwellenbach, and if it makes sense for your team, pick him up because you never know. He can be very good. So Schwellenbach, go ahead. I wasn't familiar with your game, but I'm keeping notes now. I'm taking tabs. I'm looking at it, man. I got you.
Yeah, one thing to note that Nick wrote in his roundup on Schwellenbach's performance was that he kind of got away with some cutters that were like in the middle of the zone. And so, you know, when you face the Tigers, who, you know, don't have the greatest plate discipline, those things kind of work. But, you know, maybe against a team with a better offense, right, that's not something that you want to give up. But partially because he gets the Cards and then the Pirates next, like, I think that's kind of a good excuse to be like, well, even if he makes mistakes, the teams that he's facing aren't going to necessarily take advantage of that. So that's kind of where maybe there's a little less risk, but he has some stuff in his game that he needs to clean up.
Yeah, that's a great point. That schedule is pretty pitcher friendly, so now's the time to jump on board because you might miss out if you wait too late before those matchups. So definitely jump on board to Spencer Schwellenbach of the Braves if you have the space. Now, we are going to take our last break, and when we come back, we will talk about Wednesday, we will talk about Thursday, and we will recommend some streamers for the upcoming week. You won't want to miss it, so make sure you don't go anywhere. We are back, and it's time to talk about Wednesday's performances on June 19th. Thanks to Seth Klusmeyer for the Murphy's The Law Hit a Recap article, which is kind of funny because you did say Murphy's Law during the Austin Riley portion, and there's actually an article named after that. So pretty good synergy there, John. You were feeling the pitcher list energy on that, so good job.
Completely. Totally in on it. Yep.
We'll start with the title boy himself, Sean Murphy of the Braves, who went 4-for-4 with 2 home runs, 3 runs, and 4 RBI. What a huge game for Sean Murphy, who has been relatively quiet all season long. He's dealt with some injuries, he had a slow start, and just hasn't had as good of a season as he did last year and even the year before that. Murphy has also been playing every other day or 2 days in a row and then getting a rest day, so it's hard to roster him in fantasy. However, if this was the light bulb switching on moment, then Murphy could be in for a huge second half. He's certainly capable of it. We've seen it before. So Sean Murphy, if he's out there, keep him on your radar. And if you need a catcher, he might be worth scooping up. But for me, I want a catcher that plays the majority of the time or maybe sits 1 or 2 days of the week, not 4. So it's kind of hard to roster someone like that. And especially in those shallower leagues, you kind of look for a different catcher, someone like a Mitch Garver who plays almost every day, Yainer Diaz who almost plays every day. So people like that are who I want to see at catcher, not Sean Murphy. But if he plays every day, we know what he's capable of. Then we have Josh Naylor of the Guardians, who went 3-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. Naylor has been having a really good season so far. He's slashing .237, .322, .498 with 19 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 40 runs, and 54 RBI. He was going pretty late in drafts this year and has been performing like a top 5 first baseman, especially in points leagues and OBP leagues. It's funny because I was chanting about Christian Walker last season and saying that he was going very undervalued in drafts because we expected a big season from Corbin Carroll. We were expecting a good season from Ketel Marte. So Christian Walker kind of went undervalued in those scenarios. And Josh Naylor is pretty much the same thing. He's going late in drafts. He has big power upside. And he's got Jose Ramirez in his lineup, who we expect to be good, as well as people like Andrés Giménez and Stephen Kwan, who we expect to be serviceable. So why wouldn't Naylor be good? Which makes me wonder, do the Guardians sign Naylor to a long-term contract? We're really not thinking about the non-fantasy aspect here on this podcast all the time, but it's certainly something to think about because he's only 27 years old and seems to be hitting his prime right now, but I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. Lastly, we have Bryce Harper of the Phillies, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Harper is just very good at baseball, and I wanted to mention him. But something interesting, during an in-game mic'd up session with Juan Soto, when asked whose bat to ball sounds the craziest between Harper, Judge, and Stanton, Soto said Harper, which I believe because when Harper was in high school, he was hitting 500-foot moonshots and was the can't-miss prospect of the generation, so I'm not surprised that off the bat, his ball sounds different. So I am fully in on that with Soto, and I'm surprised he didn't say Judge, to be honest, just because he's his current teammate. But he was honest. I think he was telling the truth.
Yeah, the most annoying thing about this game is just the 2 RBI. Just come on. Yeah. Come on, Phillies. Get on base. Get on base before this man. Like, it's not that hard. Well, okay, it is that hard, but it's Bryce Harper. Just do it. No, I'm not salty about the fact that like I mentioned, my opponent has 5 home runs and 10 RBI. And meanwhile, Bryce Harper gets 2 home runs and still can only get 2 RBI. But whatever. I digress. Josh Naylor, man. Even though he plays for Cleveland, he's been so much fun to follow this season. I traded for him in fantasy this year on my Dynasty team, and it's been a blast to see him and see how much he's grown, especially with 19 homers this season. That's huge. He hasn't had this level of power midseason, and so if he stays consistent with this, he's gonna top 30 for sure. And if he can kind of get close to 100 in both runs and RBI, I think that would be just incredible. So shout out to Josh Naylor, who's really been turning it on. I don't know if I'm ready to crown him as like a top 5 guy for the next 2-3 years. I think, we're just seeing this for the first year. If he can kind of be consistent with it in the second half of the season, then maybe I'm more willing to include him in that conversation. But he's been so good this year. And I'm a big fan, even though he plays against my he plays for the rivals. And then finally, Sean Murphy, man. If only he could be consistent, right? Like, I think that's the most frustrating thing with Sean Murphy is that Atlanta trades like a ton of stuff for him, and then they kind of just ignore him, and they're like, "Yeah, sure, we'll play you every other day." And they have Travis d'Arnaud like taking at bats away from Sean Murphy, which is kind of hilarious. If he's consistent, then obviously he's much more worth it. But I would rather have like a guy like Yainer Diaz or maybe even Elias Diaz than Sean Murphy, because I just know I'm going to get more at bats from those guys than I am going to get from Sean Murphy.
I'm also with you on Josh Naylor maybe not being a top five first baseman for a few years to come. And that's kind of a toss up, because I think in the top five, right, we can definitely say Freddie Freeman. We can definitely say Matt Olson. We can definitely say Pete Alonso. Like, that's three for sure. Then everyone throws Vlad in, and I just want to disregard him. I don't think that he is deserving of top five for fantasy. I think Christian Walker is better. And then I also think right now, Josh Naylor is better. I mean, sure, Vlad probably has a higher average than Josh Naylor and a higher OBP, but Naylor is getting the counting stats. Naylor's hitting home runs. Naylor's stealing some bases. So I don't know. I think I'd rather Josh Naylor. And I'm sure I'm missing out on a few first basemen that I haven't included, but I think the top four for me at least is Freeman, Olson, Alonso, and Christian Walker.
And Bryce Harper.
Oh, yeah, Bryce Harper's a first baseman now. Totally forgot. So, yeah, that's the top five. Josh Naylor really can't crack that unless he surpasses Christian Walker. And then Vlad, like I said, I don't even think he enters the conversation, but that's for a different day to discuss, because we could do a whole podcast on that, to be honest. I mean, I know there's a lot of Vlad Jr. truthers, and I'm not one of them. So, but also, I saw something really funny that I wanted to bring up about Josh Naylor. Mm-hmm. It was on Twitter, and someone posted, like, every time Josh Naylor hits a home run, he looks at the pitcher or looks at the ball like he was disrespected by the pitcher for even throwing him that pitch. And it's really funny. Like, if you watch any of the highlights of him hitting a home run, it's so true. And I laugh every time because the look on his face is like, how dare you throw me that pitch? It's so good.
Yeah, he took that personally.
Yeah, it's really, really funny. But moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the heavy is the head that wears the brown SP Roundup article. We start with the title boy himself, Hunter Brown of the Astros, who went six innings pitched, one earned run, seven hits, no walks, and six strikeouts against the White Sox. Brown has been a monster in his last nine starts. He has a sub 250 ERA, a near 30% strikeout rate, and a 105 whip. Brown has six quality starts in a row and looks like he's completely found it. He's still a bit erratic, like Nick mentions in the SP Roundup article, and the command isn't fully there, but when results like this are happening without consistency, you can only imagine what it will look like when he does find that consistency. If you were able to pick up Brown from the wire after a frustrated manager dropped him, then you have been profiting for the last few months. Keep holding on, and if you have him and you didn't drop him, kudos to you, because there was a very rough patch going on there and you stuck through it and you are definitely being rewarded for it. Next, we have Freddy Peralta of the Brewers, who went six innings pitched, zero earned runs, three hits, two walks, and eight strikeouts against the Angels. Oh, thank God. Peralta was starting to worry me for a minute there. His last three starts against, listen to these opponents, the White Sox, Tigers, and Reds, have been horribly bad. So it's really nice to see Peralta get back to himself here in yet another easy matchup. Previously known as Professor Chaos, Freddy hasn't fully reverted back to that person, but he shows glimpses of it at points. However, his heater and slider were working how you want them to in this one, and hopefully he'll get more extension on the fastball moving forward to be able to propel him into the bona fide ace territory. And last but not least, Tanner Bibee of the Guardians went six innings pitched, no earned runs, three hits, one walk, and 12 strikeouts against the Mariners. Bibee, that's back-to-back insane starts for him. In the start before this one against the Mariners, he had an 11 strikeout performance against the Reds. Granted, he gave up four earned runs in that one, but still, 11 Ks followed up with a 12K performance is awesome. He dominated Seattle in this one with a golden goal, getting 20 whiffs and having a 43% CSW. His curveball actually was the dominator in this one, with a 55% CSW across 20 of those pitches thrown. Insanity. Hopefully Bibee can keep performances like this coming. If the changeup improves and this curveball is real, I certainly think that he can.
I wanted to talk about Hunter Brown on over the weekend because he had a great start there, and then it was like, nope, we'll wait for a little bit for the Wednesday game, and it is a little telling when the players that you mentioned in this podcast are all the ones that I'm facing.
Right.
Yeah. But man, Hunter Brown's completely turned it around. Like, honestly, it's so happy for him that he has 6 quality starts. Like, he's really been, he really kind of ignored that 9 earned run game that he had. And then I think it was like 2 starts after that, he had another bad one as well. And so like, it was like, he had one moment where everyone dropped him. Right. And then you picked him up, because you're like, hey, Hunter Brown, he's like kind of good. And then he had another terrible start, right? And then it's like he got dropped even more. If you believed in Hunter Brown and the you believed the stuff was there, congratulations. You know, that worked out really well for you. The other two guys you mentioned, Freddie Peralta, Tanner Bibee, you know, both those guys are guys who we expect good stuff from day in, day out. And Bibee, obviously, injury was kind of the reason why he wasn't able to contribute. Peralta, like you mentioned, has just been kind of bad here and there. But yeah, seeing good starts from them, really good for their confidence. And again, I hate that Tanner Bibee plays with the Guardians and that the Twins have to face him. But at the end of the day, he's a really, really good pitcher. And it's nice to see that he's actually turned it around from last season, where I think there were some doubts at the end of the year of like, is this guy really an ace? And this year, I think he's like completely shut down those doubts. And he's like, no, I am good. I'm a good pitcher and you should believe in me.
Yeah, he was a top prospect and people believed in him, but then he had an incredible rookie showing and people were like, oh, he can't be this good. And here he is saying, yeah, I'm this good. I'm going to keep bringing it. So it's very cool to see when that stuff kind of happens.
Yeah, shout out to Bibee. All right, moving on to Thursday's games. This was kind of a series of weird games. Like I mentioned, I think I only had like 2 games on my fantasy baseball lineup today. I think, Lee, you mentioned you didn't have that many games.
No, I had like 3 players across the board. It was a short slate.
Yeah, the schedule was kind of weird this week, I think, because there was like a lot of teams had days off on Monday and then some teams have days off on Thursday. So trying to find some really good performances for you guys. One of them came from the Orioles game where they beat the Yankees 17-5. So there had to be something good that happened. And part of that something good was Ryan Mountcastle, 3-for-6 with 3 hits, 4 RBIs and a walk. He actually did all this damage without a homer, which is kind of surprising for Mountcastle. He did get 2 doubles, so that certainly helps. He's firmly entrenched as the number 3 batter in this elite Baltimore lineup, and he's on his way to another stellar season. We'll see if he can break the 30 homer mark like he did in 2021. And he's currently ranked as the 9th best first baseman in 5x5 leagues based on year-to-date numbers. For context, Josh Naylor is number 3 in those rankings. But yeah, Mountcastle fully taking advantage of the fact that he has guys like Adley and Gunnar around him who can either bat him in or he can bat in. And that offense is just so potent. Again, they scored 17 runs today against the Yankees. Luis Gil was a starter in that one, which is, kind of annoying for anyone who rostered Luis Gil, but shout out to the Orioles for being able to dominate the Yankees there. And then moving on, Jose Miranda of the Minnesota Twins, 2-for-5 with a run, 3 RBI and a home run here. Miranda tied up the game in the bottom of the 9th with a 3-run blast, although the Twins did end up losing the game in extras. Even though he was banished to the minors last season after struggles with injuries and inconsistency at the plate, he's found a way to stick on the team this season in the majors, even while competing with Royce Lewis for reps at third base. The Twins have been kind of willing to put him at first, and obviously they're still kind of giving Royce rest days here and there. So Miranda is able to, be able to play pretty consistently every single day. It's probably tough to consider rostering him in anything shallower than a 15-team league, but his slash line at 277, 315, 463 with some power does play. The counting stats are obviously not great for him, and that's kind of because he didn't play that many games so far this season compared to his contemporaries. But if you need like a corner infield in a 15-team league, or you're looking for something in an AL-only league, I have Jose Miranda on my TGFBI team, so obviously I'm enjoying that. He's been solid. Not great, but pretty solid.
Yeah, Ryan Mountcastle was like fringe fantasy baseball player last season and the year before that. It was like, hey, do we care about this guy anymore? And this year, it turns out we do. Like, every Orioles player seems to be contributing in some way. Like, Jordan Westberg took a big step forward. Adley's been great, of course. Gonner's been one of the best players in baseball. Ryan O'Hearn has been good. Santander's on a hot streak. Mountcastle's good. Like, up and down, that lineup is contributing. I mean, even Cedric Mullins is going at it. Jorge Mateo's pitching in there. Unfortunately, Jackson Holliday is like the only guy who didn't do anything for the Orioles and then went down. So that Orioles lineup is just deadly, though, and they proved it on Thursday against the Yankees. And Mountcastle is someone interesting, especially in deeper leagues or leagues with corner infield spots. You might want to grab Mountcastle if he's available. I don't consider him to be a top 10. I know you said that he's ranked as the ninth best hitter for first baseman in year-to-date numbers, but I just don't see that sticking as well because he might be platooned a little bit with O'Hearn and he might have some days off. So I don't know, it's a little bit weird with Mountcastle, but he has been great so far. And if you have him, enjoy the ride because that Orioles lineup is thriving. And then Jose Miranda, yeah, he's just someone that can fill in for a corner infield spot. I believe he only has third base eligibility on TGFBI.
He probably doesn't have enough for first base right now. He doesn't have enough games for first base.
Okay, so yeah, just corner infield spot. And Jose Miranda can fill that with ease. He can have some good games. At least his slash line's very good. His average is maintainable. He's a pretty good hitter. He's not going to give you insane stats, but he's going to give you consistency. And I think that's all you can really ask for from a corner infield position. So if you need someone in that spot in a deeper league, Jose Miranda is someone to look for.
Yep. Moving on to pitchers then, Seth Lugo of the Royals, 6.2 innings with 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, 8 strikeouts. Lugo continued his resurgence season this year with a quality start against the A's. The start was interesting because he actually generated more strikeouts with his curveball and his four-seamer. But because of his kitchen sink methodology, it's kind of hard to pinpoint any single pitch as an elite offering from Seth Lugo. He just throws so many pitches that, you know, sometimes it works just because it's just something that batters aren't expecting. That being said, though, you can't really argue with a top 20 ERA of 2.42 and a solid whip as well to boot. While his strikeout rate has gone down since he's been converted to a starter, he still has great command, although in this one he did have 3 walks. So, yeah, Seth Lugo, still a really solid pitcher despite a couple bad starts past few weeks. And then Gavin Stone of the Dodgers, 5.1 innings with 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts in a win. This start wasn't Coors, which makes this line pretty impressive. Stone mostly went fastball changeup with this one, earning 15 whiffs on the day with an overall 34% CSW. Fairly solid locations, too, with not a lot of mistakes middle-middle. It did get a little dicey in the sixth inning, though, when Stone loaded the bases, and then Jake Cave, of all people, hit a 2-run single to knock Stone out of the game. He only had 77 pitches when he left. His strikeout rate is in the 28th percentile, and his walk rate's about average, so he certainly is not an elite pitcher, although he does attempt, like, he does get decent strikeout games, like he has here with the 7 strikeouts. It does happen for him. He does get decent starts, though, because he, again, pitches for the Dodgers, so it's a good winch chance all the time for Gavin Stone. He is a guy who is, you know, widely rostered in most leagues, so if you have him on the waiver, maybe pick him up. But, yeah, solid game for him, especially in cores. Would love to see that be 6 innings, but that is that's the Dodger way sometimes, is they'll take a guy out a little bit early.
Everyone already knows my love for Seth Lugo, so I'm not going to harp on that. I just think he's a great pitcher, and I think he's always undervalued, and he's been fantastic this year, so grats to Lugo. And then Gavin Stone is interesting because every time I look, I usually see like a 6-inning start or a 7-inning start with like 2 strikeouts or 3 strikeouts. So yep, it's nice to see him get 7 strikeouts in this one, especially in Coors. I mean, the Rockies aren't good, but what's with the Dodgers and their mid pitchers like James Paxton and Gavin Stone carving people up at Coors Field?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. So shout out to Gavin Stone, man. That's a great start for him. And he's been just a very serviceable like SP5 or SP6 for your fantasy teams. And sometimes that's just good to have. Reliability is always good. But that wraps up the player performances from this past week. And it's time to recommend some streamers for next week. John, on the pitching side of things, who do you have?
All right. Streaming is an art, right? And sometimes you do not pick great players to go. Like last week when we were struggling to find some guys who were in the correct range. And this week I was like, I'm not going to cheat. I am not going to put in guys that are above 25% rostered. I'm going to, you know, go pedal to the metal and recommend some guys who literally are in the bargain bin. So apologies in advance if these don't work out. But we are going to start with Spencer Arrighetti of the Houston Astros. He's 7% rostered on Yahoo, 0% on ESPN. I honestly don't want to recommend this guy. He's got a 6.37 ERA and a 1.71 whip, but he gets to face the Rockies in Houston on Wednesday. And if you're desperate or in a deeper league, this might be a solid option. Arrighetti's got really good strikeout numbers. He's got like a K per 9 over 10 or something like that. But again, he also has a 6.37 ERA, so you can kind of tell how most of his starts go. There's just a lot of risk that comes with a guy who gets a lot of strikeouts. And for him, it's that he gives up a ton of runs. So if you feel like facing Rocky Road, this might be an option. But the other guy I want to talk about is someone who I already mentioned, Spencer Schwellenbach, who is 11% rostered on Yahoo, 3% on ESPN. Continuing on the Spencer theme here, I had to check if Spencer Turnbull was back in the rotation yet, but alas, he is not. Schwellenbach gets a two-star week. He's got the cards. He's got Pittsburgh. I think you should go out and get him right now because his pitches seem to work. At least against poor opponents, Schwellenbach is probably worth keeping on your roster. And then finally, no, I did not pick another Spencer pitcher. There was another guy available, Spencer Howard, and that's not something I would subject you guys to. So we're going to go with Chris Flexen, who's 2% unrostered on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN. He is pitching for the Chicago White Sox. This is also a I like to live dangerously pick, and I definitely do not recommend this pickup if you're in a weekly league because Flexen starts out with the Dodgers on Tuesday. However, he does get Colorado at home in Chicago on Sunday, and Flexen has shown some solid stuff. Today, against the Astros, he pitched 6 innings with 6 strikeouts, and if you love recency bias, this is a pickup for you. And if he can do that against the Rockies at home, that is going to be a pretty good start. So, those are your three options. Spencer Arrighetti, Spencer Schwellenbach, and Spencer Chris Flexen.
I really wish you just went with Spencer Howard because I'm not streaming Chris Flexen regardless. So You should have went with Spencer Howard, Spencer Turnbull, Spencer Strider. Yeah. I'd rather stream Spencer Strider right now than Chris Flexen. But I love the actual going back to the roots of picking people that are real bargain bin people. And as you mentioned, Spencer Schwellenbach, I think, is my one. I am kind of going to do a deep dive afterwards, and I really like the thought of him against the two teams that you said he was going up against, Pittsburgh, and the other one was what, the Cardinals?
The Cardinals, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I like those two matchups, and if he is as good as he was against Detroit, then I am all in on Spencer Schwellenbach. Then I will go with Arrighetti. He has such good upside, but hasn't really delivered on that despite like one good start.
Mm-hmm.
So Hopefully he can return that. I mean, the matchup is great, so I'll choose him second. And then, as much as I was joking, Chris Flexen, former Met, so not going to get mad at him. I like Chris Flexen. But yeah, he can definitely perform well, especially against Colorado at home. So that is always a good matchup to utilize, and I will take him third. So my order is Schwellenbach, Arrighetti, and Chris Flexen. And then as for the hitters, I'm going to recommend two names, and I'm kind of cheating. They're not really bargain bin guys, but it's mainly for those shallower leagues that maybe a manager got frustrated and dropped one of these guys earlier on when they weren't performing, but they're both probably rostered. And those names are Ian Happ of the Cubs, who's 73% rostered on Yahoo, and Wyatt Langford of the Rangers, who's 76% rostered on Yahoo. These guys are heating up. Happ has 5 straight multi-hit games that include 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 6 runs, and 8 RBI. And Langford has been hitting .288 in June, which is a huge improvement on the .222 average that he carried coming into the month. On top of that, in his last 10 games, Langford has stolen 6 bases, scored 3 runs, knocked in 9 RBI, and hit his first over-the-fence home run, because if you didn't know, his only one career home run was an inside-the-park home run. He finally hit one out of the park against the Mets, of course, so had to watch that, but hey, I was happy for him. But both guys seem to be heating up right now, and it's only right to do your due diligence and check if they're available in your league. I checked in some of my leagues. Wyatt Langford was available in one. Ian Happ was available in another. I scooped them both up, and I am profiting. So make sure that you check if they're available because they might have been dropped. You never know. And right now they are on heaters.
Yeah, I really like the Ian Happ choice. Only because like I feel like he just always has a weirdly like solid season. It's like never great, right? But it's like good enough for like the third or fifth outfielder on your team, depending on, you know, what your roster looks like. Picking him up is really solid. And then Langford, yeah, I actually have not been following him too much. Obviously, he was on the injured list for quite a bit, so probably took him a little bit out of the public eye. But hey, love betting on upside, and clearly the Rangers love something in him. And it's actually kind of surprising that he only has two homers for how much power he supposedly should have. But that's going to change at some point. So. Yeah, if they're both heating up, then I would say definitely try to get one of these if they're available.
Yeah, I'm actually very upset because in my home league, Ian Happ was dropped pretty early on, and that was because he was struggling really bad out of the gate. And I picked him up not too long ago, like I would say a month ago, like right around when Tyler O'Neill got injured, I picked him up to kind of fill in for him. And then, well, Tyler O'Neill came back, and I didn't really have any space on my team. So I dropped Ian Happ because he had like a little bit of a cold stretch. And then Ian Happ went on this tear like a week later and I missed out on it. And then not only that, but to add insult to injury, I was going to pick him up again 2 days ago. And my opponent this week, who is already killing me offensively, picked him up.
Oh, tough.
Yeah, just not a good time. But I was able to scoop Wyatt Langford up in a league, and I'm very happy about that because we were so high on him coming into the year. Like, he was the number one top can't-miss prospect, and he excelled in every single section that he was in coming up through the minors. And he kind of started off slow in the majors, and yeah, like you said, only two home runs, one being an inside-the-park home run, so very surprising, but I think that's all going to change, especially as the ball is maybe being changed or the weather gets better and the ball starts traveling more, whatever it may be. Langford's speed and power combo is something that should not be overlooked. So if he's out there, now is the time to pick him up, because once he starts kicking in, you are going to kick your own butt for not picking him up, because he is going to be very good. Maybe not this season. Maybe it's just a mirage, but he's heating up. And if he's good this season, you don't want to miss out. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I hope that you all enjoyed. Before you all go, make sure that you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe, that's THEJOHNKE, and you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal, that's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. Make sure you follow this podcast and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us on the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back in 2 weeks. John and I are both very busy next week, and I think we are taking 1 week off, so we will be back after that. But we will see you in 2 weeks for another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.